From Greenville, South Carolina, we present Let the Bible Speak. Let the Bible Speak is the radio ministry of the Free Presbyterian Church of North America, preaching Christ in all his fullness.
We welcome you to this broadcast of Let the Bible Speak, featuring the recorded messages of Dr. Alan Cairns, Minister Emeritus of Faith Free Presbyterian Church in Greenville, South Carolina. Today, Dr. Cairns continues his series in the book of Romans as he brings the next portion of a message entitled, Defending the Goodness of God. The text is found in chapter 9, verses 14 through 29. The Jews of Paul's day objected to his teaching that God has chosen some to salvation while leaving the rest to perish in their sin. They claimed that by doing so, God was either unjust or that he was not good. These objections are still being raised in our day. Paul counters by arguing that God owes no man anything, since all men are sinners, not only by birth, but also by deliberate choice. It is purely of God's grace that anyone at all is saved, for mercy is the bestowment of a sovereign God. The problem with the lost is that they choose to reject the mercy which God offers in Christ, so God gives them exactly what they want, eternity without him. Through the example of Pharaoh, who hardened his heart in the face of the plagues, Dr. Cairns emphasizes that God must implant new life in a person before that one can cry for salvation. Dr. Cairns will be with us shortly. First, we invite you to enjoy this brief devotional thought from Morning and Evening, a collection from the pen of the great 19th century English preacher Charles Haddon Spurgeon. This morning's text is found in Psalm 73 and verse 22. So foolish was I and ignorant, I was as a beast before thee. Remember, this is the confession of the man after God's own heart. And in telling us his inner life, he writes, So foolish was I and ignorant. The word foolish here means more than it signifies in ordinary language. David, in a former verse of the psalm, writes, I was envious at the foolish when I saw the prosperity of the wicked, which shows that the folly he intended had sin in it. He puts himself down as being thus foolish, and adds a word which is to give intensity to it, So foolish was I. How foolish he could not tell. It was a sinful folly, a folly which could not be excused by frailty, but to be condemned because of its perverseness and willful ignorance, for he had been envious of the present prosperity of the ungodly, forgetful of the dreadful end awaiting all such. And are we better than David that we should call ourselves wise? Do we profess that we have attained perfection, or to have been so chastened that the rod has taken all our willfulness out of us? Ah, this were pride indeed. If David was foolish, how foolish should we be in our own esteem if we could but see ourselves? Look back, believer. Think of your doubting God when he has been faithful to you. Think of your foolish outcry of, Not so, my Father, when he crossed his hands in affliction to give you the larger blessing. Think of the many times when you have read his providences in the dark, misinterpreted his dispensations, and groaned out, All these things are against me, when they are all working together for your good. Think how often you have chosen sin because of its pleasure, when indeed that pleasure was a root of bitterness to you. Surely, if we know our own heart, we must plead guilty to the indictment of a sinful folly. And conscious of this foolishness, we must make David's consequent resolve our own. Thou shalt guide me with thy counsel.
Perfect way, though cometh sorrow, great be sunshine or rain, the steps of a good man are ordered by the Lord, and he delighteth in his way. Though he fall, he shall not be utterly cast down, for the
As you hear in the introduction to these broadcasts, Let the Bible Speak seeks to present Christ in all his fullness. Are you seeking to present the gospel of Jesus Christ to some loved one, some neighbor, or someone with whom you work? We're pleased to offer you a booklet by Dr. Alan Cairns that is an excellent evangelistic tool. It's entitled, The Gospel of Salvation, Full, Free, and Final. In this little book, Dr. Cairns finds a balance between those who admire the message but keep it to themselves and those who, in their haste to present the gospel, do not take time to examine its true content and therefore never really present it in its beauty and fullness. Dr. Cairns understands the gospel as it is presented by Christ to be the fullness of God, and he presents it freely to all who will believe. Furthermore, he explains that the salvation declared in the gospel, once received and experienced, is final. The believer is kept by the power of God, and nothing can separate him from the love of God. For a free copy of The Gospel of Salvation, just contact us. You may write Let the Bible Speak, 1207 Haywood Road, Greenville, South Carolina, 29615. That's Let the Bible Speak, 1207 Haywood Road, Greenville, South Carolina, 29615. If you wish, you may email your request to ltbs@freepres.org. That's ltbs@freepres.org. Or you may simply call us toll-free at 866-877-LTBS. That's 866-877-5827. Supplies are limited, so request yours right away. Ask for The Gospel of Salvation, Full, Free, and Final by Alan Cairns. Thank you.
Now you would think that all the things that happened to Pharaoh would have naturally softened his heart, just as you would think that many of the troubles and tragedies of life, the pain and the suffering, the disasters, the sudden deaths, would lead people today to become softened toward God. But you see, unless God introduces mercy, unless God introduces a new principle into the fallen, depraved soul of man, all the suffering in the world will not open his heart to God. This is what was happening with Pharaoh. Now, undoubtedly this was according to the will of God, but I want you to understand this. When God comes to a sinful soul to show mercy, he must introduce into that soul something that is not there. A soul is dead, he introduces life. The understanding is darkened, he introduces light. The will is depraved, he renews it and introduces a desire for God. In other words, to save us, God has to use Paul's word, create something. If any man be in Christ, he is a new creation. But when he's dealing with someone in strict justice, to harden them in their obstinacy, their chosen obstinacy, he does not introduce anything into the heart that is not already there. What he is doing, in effect, is depriving that person, not that he had any right to it, of the introduction of something that would change his heart. And he's leaving him to the natural disposition of his own depraved heart. Now that doesn't lessen in any way the absolute sovereignty of God in choosing to do this in one and not in another. But nonetheless it puts the blame for man's destruction where it belongs. Let me tell you, there is not a man whose heart is hardened against Christ who doesn't want it to be hardened. Let me change that around a little bit, for I think I need to nail this. The notion that there's a bunch of people running around the world and they're, oh, I wish that God had chosen me. I wish that God loved me. I wish that God would give mercy to me. I wish that God were willing to save me. The notion that there's such a people running around the earth and they're seeking and they're longing to be the elect of God, and big God up in heaven in the hardness of his heart is saying, no, I won't have you. It is an absolute folly, and it's an invention of the devil. Those people don't exist. The truth is that you have people running around the world hardened against God with all their heart, with all their will. And the hardening, the judicial hardening, as theologians call it, that's a good name for it. The judicial hardening that God does to their hearts is to say, you want that? Then you have it. Whosoever God will have mercy upon, he does have mercy. And whosoever he will harden or leave in his natural state to go the way of his own depraved heart, mind, and will, he will leave. The conclusion is that God is just in his sovereign treatment of all men, either in mercy or in judgment. Now the next section starts at verse 19, and there he defends the goodness of God. You'll notice that verse 19 introduces the second part of the charge against God. Thou wilt say then unto me, why does he yet find fault? For who has resisted his will? In other words, The argument here is that God's goodness is compromised by such a statement of the sovereignty of God as Paul has just given and as I have just tried to expound. You're saying that God's will is sovereign. It's not of him that willeth, of him that runneth. It's of God that showeth mercy. He has mercy in whom he will have mercy, in whom he will he hardens. Okay then, why is he finding fault with us? For who has resisted his will? In other words, this is the old argument of making the sovereign will and eternal purpose of God the excuse and the reason for man's sin and lost estate and eternal damnation. Paul's answer in verse 20 is, "Nay, but O man, who art thou that repliest against God?" First thing, and I would to God we would never forget this. Paul is, you know, Paul was a philosopher. Paul was a theologian. Paul was a man of immense learning and logical power. And yet, he didn't employ it here. He just gets right down to brass tacks and he says, look, let these words sink in. Who art thou, O man, that would reply against, that would contradict God? And he's saying, look, will you stop and think for a minute? There's man. There's God. And you have man questioning God? You have man contradicting God? You have man finding fault with God? Who on earth do you think you are? That's the argument. God is beyond human criticism. And I want to tell you, that's the God I believe in. That's the God I believe in. I will not worship a God who is subject to my criticism, or who has to change according to the stupidities of my logic. I will not worship such a God. He would then be inferior to the very sinner who's worshiping him. I am glad to come to the limitless ocean of the vastness and the greatness and the glory and the incomprehensibility of eternal God. And the more I do not understand of him, the more I will admire him. Who art thou, O man, that repliest against God? And now he comes to some detail. Shall the thing formed say to him that formed it, why hast thou formed me or made me thus? Hath not the potter power over the clay of the same lump to make one vessel unto honor and another vessel unto dishonor? What he's saying is, as our Creator, God has the absolute right to make out of man whatever he wills. Oh, we hear so much about that's offensive to the dignity of man. Let me tell you, man is made to express the dignity of God. That's our whole purpose in existence. Everything that is exists for the purpose of declaring the greatness and the glory of God. But watch this carefully. The thing formed, say to him that formed it. The word form is the Greek word that gives us the English word plastic. It's a verb that means to mold, to form, to fabricate. Interestingly, it's used in 1 Timothy chapter 2, verse 13, of the different ways in which God formed Adam and then formed Eve. Charles Hodge points out, I think very astutely, that Paul is not speaking of God having the right to create some men sinful in order to punish them. He and others indeed are pointing out that the subject is God's sovereign right to deal with sinful man according to his good pleasure. God never created a sinner. And here, Isn't it interesting? Paul does not even get into that big thing that theologians wrestle with again and again and again. The eternal decree of God in relation to sin. Because for anything to come to pass, according to what we were singing in Dr. Minnick's beautiful rendition of the teaching of Ephesians 1, whatever comes to pass according to the good pleasure of God's will. And that includes sin. But yet God never created sin. God never created a sinner. Paul doesn't even get into that. And I think maybe a whole lot of us would do a whole lot better if we had the wisdom of the apostle and just stuck with what we know instead of trying to wade into what we cannot understand. This right of the Lord to deal with one as a vessel of mercy and make the other a vessel unto dishonor are two ways in which God deals with sinful men. All men are sinners. God is their creator. He has the right of the potter to deal with them as he wills, because the way he wills to deal with them will always be worthy of his own perfection. There's nothing unjust in God. In verses 22 and 23, Paul says, really, there's no ground to find any fault with God's sovereign judgment of the people he punishes. Now, if you read verses 22 and 23, you'll see that they're very difficult. And they're not, don't blame the translators in this. This is one thing I like about the Authorized Version, and I'm not altogether too pleased with some of the modern versions. They smooth out the difficulties. But you know, every time you smooth out a difficulty, you're interpreting, you're not translating. And many a time their interpretations are not accurate. The Authorized Version represents what Paul says here, and it's difficult because what Paul wrote is difficult. This is one of the most difficult things that Paul ever wrote. For two good reasons. Well, three. Number one, what he's writing about is difficult. Number two, he doesn't complete his sentence. It seems at times that Paul was just carried away with the tremendous torrent of words and the glory of and the concept of truth. And he must have been a wee bit of an Irishman because he never bothered to finish his sentences. That leaves you to finish them. And then even worse, more of an Irishman, his syntax is altogether broken up in bits here. So you've got an incomplete sentence with really broken syntax. And you'll see when you read verses 22 and verses and 23 that they just start something that they never complete. Perhaps the simplest rendering is the best. And I'm going to suggest other things that people have come up with. I'm going to suggest what Paul is saying here. You follow along in your Bible. What Paul is saying is, but... And I will have cause to notice that it doesn't appear in the English version, verse 22. You'll see what is in italics. Now, they may be right in putting what if. But the Greek text says, but if. Okay? Now, but if God, because he willed to show wrath and to make known his power, patiently endured the vessels of wrath fitted for destruction. Did he not have as much right to do this with them as the potter does with the clay? And did he not have the right to exercise that same sovereign choice in order to make known the riches of his glory upon vessels of mercy, which he had afore prepared unto glory? It's a very profound statement.
You've been listening to Let the Bible Speak, the radio ministry of the Free Presbyterian Church of North America. We hope that you've enjoyed and benefited from today's program. We're here as your servants for Christ's sake. If we can be of any further help to you in the things of God, we invite you to contact us. If you would like to receive our booklet, A New Beginning, a booklet that sets forth God's way of salvation in clear, concise, and biblical ways, you may have it free of charge, simply for the asking. Our mailing address is Let the Bible Speak, 1207 Haywood Road, Greenville, South Carolina, 29615. That's Let the Bible Speak, 1207 Haywood Road, Greenville, South Carolina, 29615. If you wish, you may call us toll-free at 1-866-877-LTBS. That's 1-866-877-5827. You may email us at info@faithfpc.org. That's info@faithfpc.org. Also, we invite you to visit our website at www.faithfpc.org. If you would be interested in considering the establishment of a Free Presbyterian Church in your area, by all means, let us know. Once again, you may call us toll-free at 1-866-877-5827. On behalf of Dr. Alan Cairns, this is Charles Kelch saying thank you for listening and inviting you to join us Monday through Friday at this same time as we Let the Bible Speak.